Today is the 20th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement. The deal was signed on April 10, 1998, and it brought an end to decades of sectarian bloodshed in Northern Ireland. Thousands of people died in the period known as the Troubles. Protestants or Unionists fought to keep Northern Ireland in the United Kingdom. Catholics or Republicans wanted to be part of the Republic of Ireland. George Mitchell was President Bill Clinton's envoy to Northern Ireland and was the chairman of those peace talks. Today he is in Northern Ireland to mark the anniversary, but before he left, he came into our studios to talk about his role in the historic deal. We started by listening to what President Clinton said on this day 20 years ago when it was signed.
After a 30-year winter of sectarian violence, Northern Ireland today has the promise of a springtime of peace. The agreement that has emerged from the Northern Ireland peace talks opens the way for the people there to build a society based on enduring peace, justice, and equality.
What's it like to hear that again?
It brings back warm memories of the last day, but as I've said many times before, that day of success, we had about 700 days of failure.
Really?
It was a long, tough grind. I chaired three separate sets of negotiations over a span of 5 years, and so I have much memory of Northern Ireland. I've gone there a lot and spent a lot of time there. It's really a great place. The people are great. They're energetic, productive. Somewhat prone to dispute and argumentative, but nobody's perfect. And the leaders at that time of Northern Ireland demonstrated tremendous courage and vision in reaching that agreement in a very difficult and dangerous circumstance. And so far, the peace has held.
Exactly. Difficult and dangerous circumstances. There are people who are listening to this who may not have been around to experience just how bad and dangerous it was. Just take us back and remind us what was at stake to make that violence stop.
It is an ancient conflict stretching back centuries with periodic outbreaks of violence. The most recent lasted about 20 years, and over that time about 3,600 people were killed. But that understates the violence because they had a horrific practice of engaging in what were called punishment beatings, where people were permanently maimed and crippled, and those numbers were in the tens of thousands. It was very difficult when I first went there. Roadblocks, military, armored cars, really a state of siege.
So what were you thinking when these negotiations started? Did you really think that you could break the impasse?
I was naive, to say the least, when I first went there, didn't have much exposure to the issue before, had never been to Northern Ireland before. But by the time the talks began, I had been there for a year and a half, and so I had gained a sense of how difficult it would be and how violent it would be, and the talks themselves were extremely difficult.
The Irish novelist Colm McCann wrote that your success was that you never took sides. And I want to read you what he wrote a couple of years ago. He said, "You split a feather down the middle and encouraged both sides to take flight."
Well, I tried very hard to be fair and nonpartisan. I'd had experience 6 years as majority leader of the U.S. Senate. Gives you some practice in trying to bring people together. Before that, I'd been a federal judge and a United States attorney. And so while there was considerable opposition to my serving as chairman at the outset, by the time we finished, we're all very friendly and we've remained personal friends really for the rest of the lives of many of the people who have passed away and some still continue. So it was for me a dramatic experience, but a very difficult one. 5 years is a long time. In the end, it worked out, and I've come to love the people of Northern Ireland, the place. I'm an American, very proud of it, but a large part of my heart and of my emotions will always be there in Northern Ireland.
Well, you came out of these negotiations with a power-sharing agreement so that both sides would have a say in the Northern Ireland Assembly. As you know, for more than a year, that assembly has not been functioning. It's just, it's not working. It's defunct. The two sides can't come together. A concern to you, especially on the 20th anniversary of this historic deal.
On the day that I announced the agreement, I said it was an historic achievement, which it was. But I also said on that day that by itself, the agreement did not guarantee peace or political stability or reconciliation. there would be difficult decisions down the road for other leaders, and there have been. Mm-hmm. This is not the first time the assembly has failed. In 1999, a little over a year after the agreement was reached, the assembly collapsed, and the prime ministers and President Clinton asked me to go back again. That was my third tour of duty there, and I spent several months. We put it back together again. No society is static. You solve problems that exist today, but you know very well that next week, next month, next year, there are going to be other problems, and they've got them.
So did you think 20 years later that it would still stand?
I hoped. I didn't know. I was aware that the tribal feelings were deeply entrenched. The hostility and mistrust were deeply entrenched. They're still there. It's still somewhat of a segregated
society.
There are
still walls separating neighborhoods in Belfast.
There are, and not all the problems are solved. But they have made the fundamental decision to try to resolve their problems through peaceful democratic dialogue rather than through violence. Mm-hmm. That's the most important outcome. But I must say that this can't continue because there's always a danger of slipping back. A single incident, advances in the technology of killing are so rapid that a small number of people with limited resources can cause tremendous damage. And so the leaders today have got to demonstrate the courage that the leaders demonstrated then in 1998.
We had the UK ambassador to the United States on the program recently, and I asked him if he was worried that Brexit would mean the return of a hard border between the North and the Republic of Ireland. And he said the UK has been very clear on this. It's not going to happen.
I hope people in Northern Ireland will accept that when the government says something as clearly and as emphatically as we've said it, then that's what we're going to stick to, and they can trust us to one way or another deliver this.
Are you as confident as the ambassador?
The United Kingdom and the European Union have publicly committed to there not being a hard border in Northern Ireland. The problem is it's much easier to say something mm-hmm. than to do something, particularly since it's complex. There are contradictory and conflicting demands upon them. And so far, they've not been able to come up with a formula
right.
that vindicates that commitment. I don't doubt their commitment. But getting it done is another challenge, and they haven't got it done yet.
So what's at stake if they don't? Because as you say, they can make all the promises in the world that they want, but the realities on the ground could be very different. What is at stake if it doesn't happen?
Well, first, the principal victim of a hard border will be the people of Ireland, the Republic of Ireland. The people of the UK who made this decision in a democratically taken vote, which must be respected, they're going to suffer because democracy doesn't guarantee a good result. It guarantees a fair process. And I believe history will demonstrate that the UK made a fundamental error when they adopted Brexit.
Mm.
They'll be hurt, but the people who really be hurt will be the Republic of Ireland because their economy is completely integrated into that of the United Kingdom. They'll suffer. In terms of Northern Ireland, which is on the island of Ireland but remains a part of the United Kingdom, they too will suffer because the hard border fostered demonization and stereotyping. Hundreds, thousands of people who lived a few hundred yards or a few miles from the border never crossed it. And they had an image of the other, which was negative, built on ancient stereotypes. The open border has made a world of difference in transfer of people, goods, commerce, and the reduction of stereotypes and demonization.
So could it be the thing, in your opinion, that brings a return of violence?
It could contribute to that end. It's very hard to say. There are many factors involved. No one can say with certainty this plus this will result in that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a contributing factor, and it's something that should not be tolerated. And I commend the British government and the ambassador for making such an absolutely clear and firm commitment.
Yeah.
The challenge now is to figure out a way to vindicate that commitment and to do it on the ground.
George Mitchell, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And you can let us know what you remember from those difficult days. And do you think the peace will hold for another 20 years? We're at hereandnow.org.